So let me just review with you. It should be there in your notes. My premise when I look at 2 Corinthians 8 and 9, if you're looking at your notes, is that 2 Corinthians 8 and 9 is not about tithing. It's not, and I do believe, I'm going to explain, review why I believe tithing is for the New Testament. Some don't believe that, and that's fine. They're good, godly people. One of those was my father. So he gave way over and above a tithe. So don't mistake my dad gave, but he and I would talk about this and we didn't agree, but that's okay. He'll get to heaven one day and find out his son was right. I'm joking. Okay. I may get to heaven and find out my dad was right. So anyway, that's okay. But I believe that 2 Corinthians 8 and 9 in context is about missions. And there are principles about all giving that can come from these chapters. But the primary idea is Paul is using poor churches of northern Greece and their overwhelming giving to encourage, if you want to say, you make them feel guilty. But there was this really, really rich church in Corinth. Corinth was fabulously wealthy, like America versus India. And the people in northern Greece were giving, and that he's telling the Corinthian church in 2 Corinthians 8 and 9 about how they were giving. And he's encouraging the rich people of Corinth to give to the saints in Jerusalem. Now, bear in mind, this is about early 60s. So Jerusalem is only 6 or 7 years away from being wiped out by Titus. Jerusalem is only 4 or 5 years away from the revolt of 66. So the pressure from the Pharisees against the Christian Jews had become intense and immense. They were very, 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 they'd taken their land away. They'd taken their homes away. It was very intense. And so these saints were so poor because no longer did the Jewish people on the Jewish temple tax give aid to the widows of the Christian Jews or to the orphans of Christian Jews. And so the Christian church was taking this up, except the Christian Jewish church was abject poverty. And so that's why Paul is encouraging the rich Gentile churches to take a missionary offering and send it to Jerusalem for the poor Jews. So what I talked to you about last week, why in 2 Corinthians 8:8, he tells them, if you're looking at it, I speak not by commandment, but I am testing the sincerity of your love. Now, some have understood that to be he's not ordering them to give. And that was true. He wasn't ordering them to give. But I think the commandment refers to Old Testament tithing. And I showed you that, number one, Jesus always raises the bar. In the Old Testament, adultery was adultery. But in the New Testament, Jesus says, if a man looks on a woman to lust after her, he's already committed adultery. Jesus raises the bar. So if I can't imagine Jesus would lower the bar and say, oh, it's okay if you give 2% of your income. In the Old Testament, when they didn't understand the cross, they didn't understand the resurrection, they had the Levitical Old Testament sacrificial system that, okay, we're going to give less than in the Old Testament. That's not how God worked. God clearly expects us to give and associates that giving with Old Testament tithing. That was in 1 Corinthians 9. I shared that last week. There are grave consequences directed to those who don't remunerate their pastors. So the tithing, my understanding from the Old Testament to the New Testament, is directed primarily at taking care of the priests, taking care of the pastor, taking care of the temple, taking care of the church, those kinds of things. Missions giving, to my understanding, is over and above the tithe. And then my last point before we jumped into how giving, missions giving should be done, was when a natural opportunity to explain that tithing is no longer applicable today, which is Hebrews 7, the author talks about tithing in a tenth and tithing in a tenth and tithing in a tenth. He doesn't say, okay, Christ is better and we no longer have to tithe. So those are some of my reasons why I believe 2 Corinthians 8 is referring to missions. So very quickly, I gave you 4 points last week. We're told to never consider our condition in life before missions giving. In other words, sometimes missions giving isn't going to be done because you can figure it out on a piece of paper. The fact that the children of the Greek church that was poor begged Paul to take their money. That was number two, by insisting on giving. By realizing number three, by giving themselves first. They gave themselves first. And then by realizing that giving is a grace to be exercised. So just like going to the gym, just like we have some of our folks that are going to therapy now to trying to, well, you have to exercise to build up your strength. And when I give over and above my tithe and I step out in faith to do that, that's a grace to be exercised. And as I exercise it, it becomes easier and easier because I see God bless me. And as I exercise the grace of giving, just like the grace of mercy, the grace of forgiveness, have you found that when you forgive somebody, it becomes easier for you to forgive? Have you found when you show mercy to somebody, it becomes easier to show mercy? Well, grace is just like that. When you exercise the grace of giving, God gives you more grace to give more. When you show forgiveness, God gives you more grace to forgive more. That's the exercising of a grace. When I step out in faith to do what God tells me to do, he gives me more grace to do it more and more. And that's a great truth. Okay, so the notes where we start today, number five, Paul challenges them to complete the object upon which God has burdened your heart. Number five, if you're taking notes with me, here's where we start. So it's number one today or number five in your notes. By completing the object upon which God has burdened your heart. So in 2 Corinthians 8:11, it says, but now you must also complete the doing of it. What's the it? The it is this mission's gift to the poor saints of Jerusalem. He says, but now you must also complete the doing of it, that as there was a readiness to desire it, so also may be a completion out of what you have. Here's my goal for us, and that is that maybe by this time next year or end of December of next year, we're going to have a picture of a village church in India that we've bought the land for, and we've provided the materials, and then they've used their skills of their labor to build that small church that will seat about 125 people and have a Christian witness in that church. And here's a pastor that is living on $26 a month, and he has two teenagers, and we need to have completing this object that God has been burdening our church on. We need to complete that object, and I think it's very doable for us to do that. And then a year from now, we can say, look what God allowed us as a church to do together. And it's no credit on us. We'll never likely ever meet these people. But you have no idea, if the Lord tarries 100 years, how many hundreds of people may come to know Jesus Christ through that building and through the ministry. And there may be young men that come to know Christ from that small church that go out and become pastors in India. And then that ripple effect of us throwing that rock in the pond of building a church has a ripple effect all over that area of India. We don't know how God is going to lead, but when we give to missions, we have to be willing to complete the object upon which God has burdened our heart. We have to be willing to do that. And that's what Paul is challenging them. He is going to be coming to Corinth in just a few months. And he says, don't stop giving to missions, and we'll take that money with us, and we'll take that back to Jerusalem. So notice number two or number six, two today, but six for the two sermons, by realizing that God holds a person responsible for what he has and not what he doesn't have. So let me say that again if you're taking notes. By realizing that God holds a person responsible for what he has and not what he doesn't have. 2 Corinthians 8:12, he says, for if there is a willing mind, so God first wants to know, can I give a dollar a week to missions over my time? Maybe that's all you can give. And that's okay. That's okay. He says, first of all, if there is a willing mind, it is accepted according to what one has and not according to what he does not have. Here's the great thing about God. God doesn't expect that poor church in India, where most of the members are making a dollar or a dollar and a half a day. So the average wage in that part of India is, for a working man, for a laborer, is $30 a month. It's Stop and think about that. Just stop and think about $30 a month is the average wage. But you know what? God still tells them they should tithe. And that's what they do to support their pastor. But out of that tithe is $26 a month. So God doesn't say to them, oh my goodness, you're somehow lower in God's economy because maybe you give $2 or $3 a month to your church. No, it's not. God doesn't go. God says it's a percentage, which is so wonderful because that means the poorest person in our church and the richest person in our church can still participate in missions giving as they give over and above the tithe. And it doesn't matter what the amount is because God holds us accountable, not for what we don't have. Oh, I'm not Zuckerberg. I don't have 1,000 shares of Apple stock. I'm not a millionaire. God doesn't care about that. God says, I'm holding you accountable for what you do have. I don't compare what you have to somebody that has a lot more money. I compare your giving to missions with what I blessed you with. And are you faithful with what I have given you or are you not faithful with it? Are you careful with what I have given you or are you not careful with what I have given you? God holds a person responsible for what he has and not what he doesn't have. But notice number three or number seven, if you're taking notes, by giving in a manner that has accountability. And I'm going to stress this one. By giving in a manner, if you're taking notes with me, by giving in a manner that has accountability. So when we go through this text, I'm going to read a number of verses. Paul is telling them that either four or maybe five men, some they know, some they don't know, are going to take the money to Jerusalem from the churches of Greece. So all the churches of Greece are giving an offering, and Paul says there's going to be accountability because we're going to have four or five men take the money. So it's going to be, as it were, auditable. If you could have an audit. No one is going to steal this money. So let me just stop and say why I believe so strongly in giving through the local church. Because you have accountability in the local church. On television or something that comes in the mail and they have, you know, a child on there and they tug at your heartstrings. But really, when you give outside of your local church, you honestly don't know. And what will shock so many people is when you go into the financials of many nonprofits, sometimes only 15 or 20% is actually going. Talk about the Clinton Foundation as an example of this, but 96% of the money that went to the Clinton Foundation went to payroll, not to Haiti or whoever supposedly they were raising money for. Only 4% went to the purpose of the nonprofit. 96% went into the pockets of the leaders of the organization. And even some of the, I will call better nonprofits, they have to disclose. So as a military officer, they send around every year and for the military, and you can have some of your pay deducted for any kind of different nonprofits that are out there. And they will disclose on that nonprofit form what percentage, goes to the actual work of the nonprofit. And one of the things that's appalling to me is constantly you would see numbers like 37% went to payroll, 40% went to payroll. In other words, only 60% was actually going to whatever the nonprofit was claiming was its purpose, to the people, to the children, whatever. When you give through your local church, you know where money is going. There's a business meeting. There's a financial report. You can see here's what we're doing with it. It's not going to bureaucracy. It's not going to middle level managers. It's going to take care of needs of people. When I read this, think that way. Paul is very clear. This is going to be money totally accountable. We're not going to steal anything. So look at verse number 16. So he says in verse number 16, but thanks be to God who puts the same earnest care for you in the heart of Titus. Okay, so there's Titus. For he not only accepted the exhortation, but being more diligent, he went to you of his own accord. So Titus is there. He's probably the one taking the letter to them. Okay. And we have sent with him the brother. So now you got two. The brother whose praise is in the gospel throughout all the churches. So whoever this brother was, people knew him. So there's two people they know. He's throughout all the churches. And not only that, but who was also chosen by the churches to travel with us. So now it's Paul. So there's number three with this gift, which is administered by us to the glory of God himself and to show your ready mind. Avoiding this, that anyone should blame us in this lavish gift, which is administered by us. In other words, we don't want anybody to claim this lavish gift. We're stealing some of it. We're skimming off the top for ourselves. And notice what he says then, providing honorable things, not only in the sight of the Lord, but in the sight of men. This is why I'm so always concerned that we do everything appropriately and we keep track of where money goes and who money is used on. This is about accountability. This is about us using the gifts of God's people the best possible way. These are all very important things. And notice he says in verse 22, and we have sent with them our brother, that's number four, whom we have often proved diligent in many things, but now much more diligent because of the great confidence we have in you. If anyone inquires about Titus, he is my partner and fellow worker concerning you. Or if our brethren are inquired about, that's these other men, they are messengers of the churches, the glory of Christ. Therefore, show to them and before the churches the proof of your love and of our boasting on your behalf. So some argue that there's a fifth person in there in those plurals statements of brothers, but at least four. So Paul is stressing that he is going to be absolutely, absolutely, absolutely accountable. So as whether it was at Tri-City or now at Littleton Baptist, one of my strong beliefs is we have to be very, very accountable. We want to give as much as we can to missions. We want to make it profitable missions, church planning churches, things like that. That doesn't mean there aren't other great missions opportunities, but we want to focus on church planning and planning churches. And we want to make sure that we're using the gifts God gives us the best possible way, and we're good stewards so that God will give us more so that we can give more away. Those are the whole principles of Christian giving, is that we can give more away as we're found faithful in taking care of what God gives to us. So accountability is absolutely very important. It's why I really only give through a local church. Because there's accountability. There's questions that can be asked. All those kinds of things that take place at a local level. It's one reason I believe at the political level that sending your money to Washington, it's better to send your money to a local city than it is to send it to Washington in taxes, because you have more input in your local environment. It's similar with churches. Sending money away to big bureaucracies, I don't personally think is as efficient. And it's not as much gets to actual planting of churches and winning people to Christ. So number seven was by giving in a manner that is accountable. Number eight, by preparing generously. Number eight today, or what would that be? One, two, three, four in today's sermon, or number eight for the two together. 2 Corinthians 9:1-5. By preparing generously, if you're taking notes with me, by preparing generously, do you plan to give generously to missions in 2022. I do. I am planning on giving. Elm and I are planning how we can give above our tithe generously to missions in 2022. Notice what he says. He says, now concerning the ministering to the saints, 2 Corinthians 9:1, it is superfluous. It means I don't really need to write to you about this. I don't really need to, but I'm going to anyway. For I know your willingness, about which I boast of you to the Macedonians. Okay, so the Macedonians are the poor saints in northern Greece. Macedonia is the area of northern Greece, Philippi, the book of Philippians, Thessalonica, the book of Thessalonians. Those are the poor saints of northern Greece. And he says, I boast of you to the Macedonians that Achaia was ready a year ago. So Corinth is in southern Greece. That's the region of Achaia. Okay. And he says, I boasted to them that you're ready to give and your zeal has stirred up the majority. In other words, You are wanting to do this. You're preparing ahead of time. You're ready to give. And yet he says, yet I have sent the brethren. So these people like Titus are coming to them with this letter, 2 Corinthians. And he says, I have sent the brethren, lest our boasting of you should be in vain in this respect, that as I have said, you must be ready, lest if some Macedonians come with me and find you unprepared. He said, if these poor, it would be like if the Indian people came to America and we weren't ready to help them build the church. I said, if I bring some of these poor saints from Macedonia and they come to your really, really rich city of Corinth and they see how unbelievably wealthy you are and you're not willing to give to missions, that's going to be a shock to them. So prepare yourself to give is what his challenge is. He said, come with me and find you unprepared. We, not to mention you, should be ashamed of this confident boasting. He said, I'm bragging about you. Therefore, I thought it necessary to exhort the brethren to go to you ahead of time and prepare your generous gift beforehand, which you had previously promised, that it may be ready as a matter of generosity and, get it, not a grudging obligation. I firmly believe that the commandment is to tithe, but the missions giving is not of obligation. We don't have to give to missions. But Paul is challenging them to say, it shouldn't be grudging. It shouldn't be like, as my dad used to say, you squeeze the nickel so hard the buffalo jumps. Now, you have to kind of be of my dad's generation to even remember a buffalo on a nickel. So I don't know if any of you, do any of you remember a buffalo on a nickel? So I was a little kid and I remember buffaloes on nickels, but I haven't seen a buffalo on a nickel in a long time, except in my coin collection, right? So, but my dad used to say, some people are so tight in giving to the Lord that they squeeze the nickel so hard the buffalo jumps, right? And that's what he's saying. Not, you don't have to give to missions. You shouldn't be giving to missions going, oh, this is killing me. No, it should be out of a generous spirit. I'm going to put my arms around people in heaven one day that building a church or supporting this national pastor for a few dollars a month, that they're going to come and throw their arms around me in heaven. And we're going to sit down by the tree of life and have a conversation about how their whole family came to know Jesus Christ. And they're all here with me for eternity in heaven because of the gifts that we gave. That is going to be wonderful forever. That is going to be wonderful forever. So we prepare generously. My wife and I are preparing our budgets and stepping out in faith to give generously next year to building and to missions. But notice number 9, if you're taking notes with me, by understanding the heart of cheer that falls on one who gives bountifully. So number 9, what would it be, 5? Number 5 today. But number 9 in the 2 sermons, by understanding the heart of cheer that falls on one who gives bountifully. I don't know about you, but I love to give. My parents love to give. I grew up in a family that loved to give. My dad tells stories of my grandpa Sproul, who, you know, his highest grade my grandpa Sproul went to was 6th grade. But he was born in the 1800s and he died in 1965 and he was a simple farmer. Wouldn't it be great if we had the honesty of the simple farmers of America in Washington, D.C. today? Wouldn't it be great if we had the honesty of the simple farmers in the Denver capital today? Wouldn't it be great if we had the simple honesty of people that had a 6th grade education in the late 1800s? And so they had corn. It was a dairy farm, but they had corn. They had wheat. They had pigs. They had sheep. And they would make the silage themselves from their corn for their cattle through the wintertime. And this is a farm just north of West Virginia, in southwestern Pennsylvania, about 50 miles south of Pittsburgh. And Fayette County, if you know that area, I know Meredith is nodding her head because she knows right where Fayette County is. And other neighbors would come and buy corn for their cows off my grandpa. And my dad would be filling the bags up and he would get to where the bag was the right size. And my grandpa Sproul would say to my dad, he would say, Dave, put in 2 more scoops into that bag. Put in 3 more scoops into that bag, whether it was wheat or whether it was corn. And my dad, being a typical 10, 11 year old, was, well, it would be heavier. So he didn't want to work any harder. And then it would be harder to tighten the bag up because you had more in there than was supposed to be in there, right? And my dad would say to my grandpa Sproul, he would say, Dad, he would say, we already have the right amount of, we've given them what they paid for. My grandpa Sproul would say this. He would look at my dad and say, don't you know, son, that the Bible says when you give more to people, God gives more back to you. And he would say, fill that bag up and give them 10% more than they paid for. Could you imagine going to a gas station today and having the owner come out and saying, I'm going to give you 10% more gas than you paid for? Or going to the grocery store and saying, I'm going to give you 10% more food than you paid for. That's how my grandfather ran his farm. My grandfather died. His farm was out of debt. It was worth hundreds of thousands of dollars, which in 1965 was, it was worth $500,000 when my grandfather died. It was voted the best farm in all of Fayette County. My grandfather was loved by everybody. And I mean, everybody knew my grandfather when he died because he lived a life of a Christian in absolute honesty. You know, my grandfather had great cheer. He had 10 children, 5 boys, 5 girls. 2 are in the ministry. My dad, the 9th, my uncle, the 10th. All of his children knew Jesus Christ as their savior. And my grandfather gave over and above constantly. My dad and my uncle picked that up from him. Notice what Paul says in verse 6, chapter 9, 2 Corinthians. But this I say, he who sows sparingly, now he's talking about giving, but he's using a metaphor to farming. So if you only put a little bit of seed in the ground, you're only going to get a little bit of wheat back. You're only going to get a little bit of corn back. But if you put a lot of seed in the ground, you're going to get a good harvest. He's using the same analogy. Now, some TV evangelists will use this verse to say, send me a lot of money to my TV ministry so I can have a Learjet and I can have a $20 million mansion. And they use this verse. This verse is not talking about padding the pastor's wallet. This is not talking about, this is a missions giving verse. Sowing and reaping is a missions giving verse to people that are in need, that need to hear the gospel. In this case, it was poor Christians in Jerusalem who were under persecution. He says, so don't take this out of context and listen to a TV evangelist that says, you know, I'm going to have a little prayer rug. And if you send me $100, I prayed on this prayer rug and you'll get a prayer rug in the mail. Because if you sow into my ministry, God's really going to bless you. That is a lie from the pit of hell. Do not believe that guy. He is a false prophet. He is a wolf. That is what a wolf looks like. Okay. This is a missions giving. This is giving to poor people. This is not giving to rich people. He says, they who sow sparingly will reap sparingly, and he who sows bountifully or gives to missions bountifully will also reap bountifully. So let each one give as he purposes in his heart, not grudgingly or of necessity, like it's an order. Because remember, 2 Corinthians 8:8 says he's not speaking by commandment. He's not talking about tithing. This is over and above tithing. He says, so not grudgingly or of necessity, for God loves a cheerful giver. You know, a smile on your face giver. And if you do that, God is able to make all grace abound to you, that always having all sufficiency in all things may have an abundance for every good work. As it is written, he has dispersed abroad. He has given to the poor. His righteousness endures forever. And then lastly, this is one that I think we ignore, but this is the one that excites me the most. Of every other point, so point 10, all the other points, this is the best one as far as I'm concerned. 2 Corinthians 9:10-15, and here's your point. By remembering the prayers for us by those who receive ministry through our gifts. So let me say that again, if you're taking notes with me. By remembering the prayers for us by those who receive ministry through our gifts. So look at verse 10. He says, now may he who supplies seed to the sower. So isn't that God? God's the one that physically on a farm. God creates the seeds. Okay. So he says he's using that metaphor. Now he who supplies seed to the sower and bread for food. So God gives us our food. God help you if you don't pray every time before you eat and thank God for your food. God help you. It's a great stop for 2 minutes to remember that everything you're putting in your mouth is God gave it to you and your family. He says, and bread for the food, supply and multiply the seed you have sown and increase the fruits of your righteousness. Oh, so he's using a metaphor of physical food and physical bread for their missions gifts that God is going to supply back spiritually to them. He says, while you are enriched in everything for all liberality, I often say this is the only place a Christian should ever be a liberal is in giving. Other than that, you're never allowed to be a liberal. This is it. There's one time to be a liberal, which causes thanksgiving through us to God. So in other words, he's saying, when I give liberally, I actually am thanking God. When we write a check to give to missions, actually we do it online, but when we do it online, I always say, God, thank you for giving me enough money that I can not only tithe, but I can give over and above the tithe, and you're still taking care of me. What an awesome blessing. What an awesome blessing. But then he says, for the administration of this service, that's giving of the money to Jerusalem, not only supplies the needs of the saints, that's the saints at Jerusalem, but also is abounding through many thanksgivings to God. Stop and think. So when these four or five men got to Jerusalem and they handed the church maybe tens of thousands of dollars that were then dispersed to all these persecuted Christians, who do you think the persecuted Christians were thanking God for and praying for and they were praying and thanking God for the saints in Greece, in Macedonia, in Achaia. Can you imagine when the church is finished in India, the prayers that will go from these poverty-stricken, who James will tell us are poor in this world's good, but rich in faith. You know who they're going to start praying for? I will dare say, because we did this at Tri-City, those churches prayed, the churches we built in India from Tri-City, prayed for Tri-City every single week. It was on their prayer list. Thank God for Tri-City Baptist Church. May you bless them, Lord. And you had saints that we had never met who were praying for our church on the other side of the world every single week. That's what he's saying. These saints in Jerusalem will now be praying for the churches of Greece. He says, while through the proof, verse 13 of this ministry, they glorify God for the obedience of your confession of the gospel of Christ and your liberal sharing with them. Get it? Verse 14. And by their prayer for you. I'll tell you what. I would rather have a poverty-stricken Indian with her or his very simple faith praying for me than maybe some American Christians who it's kind of a rote thing because they don't really need to depend on God for their daily bread, while the poverty-stricken Christians in India beg God to give them enough food to eat the next day. I will just tell you that the Christians I've met in India and the Philippines and around the world in many poverty-stricken nations, Myanmar, Thailand, I will say to you, they so outstrip our spirituality because they are so poor that they literally pray, Lord, give us this day our daily bread because their cupboards are bare. They depend on God every day. I really don't know too many people, even in our church, and our church isn't wealthy by any stretch of imagination, but I would dare say if I came into your refrigerator or your pantry, you have food. I mean, you really do. I mean, I have food. I pray over my meal and thank God every day for my meal. But my kids didn't grow up in a home where not one day in my kids' life did my kids ever think, I wonder if I'm going to eat three meals today. It was actually as my kids were growing up, three meals and how many snacks am I going to get today, right? I mean, my grandsons and my granddaughter are not growing up in homes in which we went out on a walk and not long ago with my grandsons and my two grandsons took food out on the walk. They had crackers, you know, we were going out on a walk and it was like, my daughter said, do you want to take some food with you? I go, we're only going for 30 minutes. I think I can last 30 minutes without food. You know, we have abundance. And when these saints in these persecuted countries that are so impoverished, I think their prayers go to God at the head of the line, way over ours. And he says, their prayer for you, who long for you because of your exceeding grace of God in you. In other words, he said they are so grateful that they're praying for you. One of the greatest things that I have, that our church can have, is as we, by God's grace, build churches in poor nations, is we are gaining people who will pray for us regularly. That is wonderful. And notice the last verse. Thanks be to God for his indescribable gift. I could probably have an 11th point here that's saying our missions giving is based exclusively on Christ's great gift to us. And I didn't add that one, but I figured 10 was already enough and you were already falling asleep on me, so I would stop it at 10. But I mean, why do I give to missions? It's because Jesus Christ gave everything to me. That's why I give to missions, because Jesus Christ gave everything to me.